it's time for our private investigator, Peter, from Absolute Facts. First of all, welcome, Peter. You there, Peter?
Thank you, and good afternoon, Alan.
Great to have you along, Peter. Peter, I think we had, well, we did. We had a question for you to go and look at, and that we know as part of your job, you spend some of the time in the courts, and we wanted you, or the listener wanted you to have a bit of a look at the trends of the cases, a bit of a, see if there's any different trends showing up. And also, I think you're going to have a look at America, because we tend to follow behind with America, don't we?
Yeah, that's true. So one was basic homework. I've just put as a heading as crime trends, basically.
Yep.
So
yep.
So start off with that, a little bit of background first. Different types of crime show distinct patterns. Violent and physical crimes are more often committed by young males, whereas females are more likely to commit property crimes. White-collar crimes such as embezzlement or fraud are more likely to be perpetrated by individuals with higher socioeconomic status.
Are they? So it's not sort of someone that's down on their luck trying to get some money to live. It's more the upper echelons wanting to live better.
White-collar crime, I guess, is that's why it's white-collar crime, I guess.
Mm.
So a more detailed look, overall, the violent crime in the US has decreased in recent years. With some categories returning to pre-pandemic levels, whilst even over there, some crimes like shoplifting have increased, others like motor vehicle theft and burglaries have seen significant declines. Violent crime as a heading, subheading, been a decrease in overall violent crime, with some categories like homicide and robbery falling significantly. This is in the States, remember?
Yeah.
Property crimes like motor vehicle theft and residential burglaries have also decreased. Specific crimes, so homicides have decreased and approaching pre-pandemic levels. Robberies have also fallen. Motor vehicle theft, a significant decrease in motor vehicle theft has been observed after a period of an increase. So there was a spike post-COVID, and now it's back to almost COVID levels. And shoplifting has increased, receiving media and policymaker attention. So shoplifting's now the hot topic, I guess, amongst the crime patterns over there. Aggravated assault. While some categories of aggravated assault have decreased, others like gun assaults remain higher than pre-pandemic levels. And I think there's been some recent examples, unfortunately, over there in the States.
Because so many of the people over there are armed, aren't they, Peter? They're allowed to carry guns.
Yeah, and I guess that's the advantage that we're lucky in Australia that's very rarely the case.
Yep.
So regional differences. So was there a question as to whether there's sort of any regional pattern to the crimes in the States? Some regions have had more pronounced declines in crime than others, and some have seen significant increases in specific types of crime. So the example given was in the Midwest has seen the most significant reductions in both murder and violent crime, whilst the Northeast has maintained the lowest rates overall. Longer term trends, many violent crimes are now at or below pre-pandemic levels, although some like aggravated assaults remain high. And then what are the influencing factors? So crime rates can be influenced by various factors, including economic conditions, social unrest, and changes in policing strategies as well. So that was sort of an overview of the state. So what the general consensus is that their crime rate is easing back to pandemic levels.
I think Australia's not doing that, is it, Peter?
No, Australia isn't, and specifically Victoria is probably the basket case, as we discussed last month, from memory. Mm. So... one of the other bits of homework you gave me was sort of about talking about the magistrate court listening into magistrate court hearings and any sort of particular trends there. I have to say, in all fairness, it's probably pretty much the same mix of cases that are being called at, or I'm seeing anyway, at magistrate court level. And in general, the magistrates obviously very much rely on mandatory sentencing, whether that's the case in respect to perhaps loss of driver's licence or a general sentencing. Obviously, they have to impose the mandatory sentencing. And otherwise, overall, in my, and this is purely my opinion, Alan, I must clarify that, I feel that there's still quite some leniency being given towards offenders.
Yeah.
I think if I was a magistrate, I'd probably have a reputation for being a bit of a hard one.
So, I think I would too, to be honest with you.
I still think, yes, I don't think I would give as much credence to some of the things that are said in defence. But anyway, I think I've raised this before. One of the things I would suggest, or one of the things I've noticed, is I think appointing a solicitor is generally quite a good move. And I'm not a massive fan necessarily of the legal profession, but I think from what I see, if you have a solicitor give your arguments at magistrate court level at least, the magistrate does seem to be quite considerate of the of a solicitor's submissions.
And they're in, the solicitor is in his workplace, isn't he? And so therefore he's not nervous before he gets started. He knows that's his job, and he's entitled to be there, whereas you or I'd sort of get up and go, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, look, I must admit, as a general rule of thumb, the solicitors are quite presentable with and quite knowledgeable and coherent in the way they present a defence and put the arguments on behalf of their clients. So, again, I would reiterate that I would recommend using a solicitor as opposed to trying to represent yourself.
Peter, I've got to take a quick break and we'll be back with more.
Time we disappear. No more excuses. Let's get out of town.
Peter, I'm talking to Peter from, pardon me, Absolute Facts is our private investigator, and we talk to him once a month. Peter, there's just a couple of quick points I want to make to you and just get your reaction. I see in today's paper the police are saying there's a huge rise in people not wearing seatbelts. Now, these seatbelts have been around for about 60 years. Well, I can't imagine why people wouldn't be putting seatbelts on.
Yeah, I did see that as well, and I think we've even talked about this before, and we couldn't figure out why, and whether it's a fact that people just tuck the belt behind them and put it in the, engage it in the clip there, but don't actually have it around them.
I don't know why you do it.
Of course, no, and the flip side, of course, is with all these new cameras and the new technology around, I'm betting you're going to be copping some fines as well, particularly at intersections. So,
silly idea.
Why would you do it? Yeah,
and why run the risk of getting hurt? Now, the other thing I just want to talk to you about, just very briefly, because you brought this up either the last month or the month before, and this Australia Post scam that's going around. I've had two texts between the time I got here between half past 10 and 12 telling me that they're trying to deliver a parcel to me that I never ordered. So you've looked at that too, haven't you? I know you brought it up a couple of months ago.
Yeah, I think generally it's just, just be wary of anything and be a little bit cynical. And obviously at the end of the day, if anyone's sending you a link asking for, you've got to pay $9.95 to have it to the delivery to continue and things like that, then clearly I certainly wouldn't be doing that, and be very careful on clicking on any particular link attached to either a text or an email. And even, one of the tips is to firstly look at the language, because sometimes it's not exact precise English.
And sometimes it's badly spelt. Sometimes it's badly spelt.
Secondly, to look at the actual... Yeah, look at the actual website as well. Yep. It's a web link or the website, because sometimes it can be very slightly different. For argument's sake, the .au could be missing.
Mm. Peter, now we did have a question we wanted you to look at, and that was related to stalking.
Yeah, so the initial question was, what is the percentage of males as stalkers as opposed to females? Now, this is more to do with the perpetrators rather than the victim.
Yep.
So in most stalking cases, surprise, surprise, the perpetrator is male and the victim is female. Yeah. While stalking is a gender-neutral crime, statistics show a significant disparity in victim and perpetrator demographics. And there's a couple of examples here. One study in Australia found that 88% of women reporting stalking were stalked by a man. And then a couple of other studies indicated that 78% of stalking victims were female and 87% of the perpetrators are male. So as you and I suspected, Alan, there's probably a fair leaning towards females being the victims and males being the perpetrators.
Mm. I wonder, I don't suppose we could ever find out whether more of them are people that have been in relationships together and broken up, or whether they are just people who have, for some reason, have taken a shine to someone and just keep stalking them because the person doesn't want them. I don't suppose there's figures like that, would there?
I haven't. I think we both know what we're heading there, that particularly given that it's males are the high percentage and possibly the category of being unable to deal with a relationship breakup. Yep. I'm pretty sure that that it'd be a fair portion of those perpetrators would be for that reason. And again, just to some more information, so women are more likely to be stalked by men rather than other women. And apparently, 19% of women had experienced stalking by a man. While only 2.5% had experienced stalking from a woman. And that's Australian Bureau of Statistics number. Men are also victims of stalking, though, Alan, so keep your eyes peeled.
And, they're not going to stalk me.
And while the statistics show they are less likely to be stalked by a woman than a woman is to be stalked by a man. So, in other words, the proportion when it comes to male victims is probably closer to 50-50 than the rather higher male aspect in respect of females being stalked. Male perpetrators, a significant majority of stalking incidents involve male perpetrators. So that reiterates the what we were talking about before. And in respect to female perpetrators, while less frequent than male perpetrators, women do engage in stalking behaviour, and some studies have indicated that they can be responsible for a notable percentage of stalking cases, particularly in specific contexts like erotomania or within intimate partner relationships.
True.
So you've really poked the bear there, Alan.
I didn't mean to do that. Peter, have you ever... I've just had a text from someone asking a question about this talk. Have you ever been asked to get involved and to sort of... I guess find out who's doing the stalking and then go and have a talk to them. Have you ever had to do that?
Yeah, I probably wouldn't be talking or approaching them at all, but I've definitely been involved in gathering evidence to confirm stalking.
Have you?
So that can involve some... absolutely, yeah. So that can involve some pretty late nights and, hiding in dark places and things like that to gather evidence to prove that stalking's been taking place.
No, you go. I don't want to cut across you.
I was just going to say there's also a lesser degree, but there's also some situations where it's just unfortunately paranoia and there's no actual physical stalking taking place, but sometimes it can be helpful to actually rule that out for your client.
Yep. So, Peter, when you have been involved in these cases... Are they mainly stalked by the person following, or are we talking about stalking as like, is it still stalking if you keep following or saying silly things to people on the likes of Facebook and all that and emails? Is that still classified as stalking?
Yeah, absolutely. So loosely called cyber stalking. So yes, you can. You can do that sort of thing. And in fact, getting back to magistrate court cases that come up, there are a number of them that come up where the generally the male, again, is subject to some sort of intervention or restrictions. And they basically breach that by exactly using social media to, I guess, for the want of better terminology, slag off their former partner. So, yes, absolutely is a relevant part of stalking, probably becoming more and more relevant than the old-fashioned, sitting opposite the house in the car kind of thing.
I've got to ask you this question. This has popped up because obviously from time to time do you have to follow people. I mean, that's part of your job and I'm not going to ask you how you do it. Have you ever been accused or someone thought that you were stalking them when in fact you're actually working on a case?
No, that's never really happened. And I guess part of the technique, Alan, would be if you sense that the person that you were watching, for whatever purpose that might be, not always from a personal relationship perspective, if you thought that they were onto you in inverted commas, then the best thing to do is to leave it and get away from there and hopefully not necessarily confirm their suspicions.
Yep. All right, I just got to take a quick break, Peter. We'll be back with more.
She stole my heart. Faster than a heat-seeking missile on a mission. Faster than a bass to the hook when daddy's fishing. Faster than a walnut rolls off a hen house. Faster than a whiskey shot goes down, down south.
I'm talking to Peter from Absolute Facts. Peter, you want to talk about people stealing cars?
Yes. So thank you, Alan. I gave myself a King's birthday present by walking out on the Tuesday morning and finding a pile of glass on the ground where my car was no more. So unfortunately it got stolen.
In the street, Peter, or in your drive?
Off street, yes, off street. So they're undeterred by sensor lights and anything else, and obviously would have made quite a bit of a racket smashing the driver's side window to get into the car.
Yep.
And it's only just recently been recovered this week after about 3 weeks missing. And I'm yet to see the vehicle, but apparently it's not too badly beaten up, although you don't know about mechanically, of course. So, yeah, it's been a bit of an experience dealing with less so the police, but certainly with insurance companies. So,
Peter, do you have to take it back?
Well, that's going to be an interesting conversation because one part of the policy says after 14 days they accept liability. But needless to say, I haven't received any money yet. It hasn't been paid out.
Yep.
And given from what I understand of the status of the vehicle, it would probably be in the insurance company's economic best interest to try and repair it and put it back on the road. But I have to figure out yet what my actual obligations are in that respect. So, yeah, it's going to be an interesting one dealing with it. And, of course, one of my previous incarnations as a private investigator was undertaking quite a number of motor vehicle investigations with accident and theft. So, it's going to be a fascinating relationship trying to deal with that one.
Peter, do you know where it's been for the 3 weeks?
No, it
hasn't popped up. It hasn't been popped up in a robbery or anything.
Well, I suspect it might have been, but again, they're not going to tell me that, but they had the forensic people out looking over the car trying to get fingerprints and that, so the fact that they've done that tells me it's probably been up to no good, so I don't think it's been on Eastlink or CityLink that I know of, and I've cancelled the tags as you do, and I people have been sending me articles about every time a car pops up driving through a tobacco store front or whatever to see if it's mine or not. So I'm not aware of anything, and I've been keenly watching Facebook posts to see if anything's come up about it either being driven erratically around town or being involved in any sort of incidents. But no, I'm not aware of anything, and they've done something unusual things like they're throwing out the my granddaughter's seat, which is unfortunate, and they've also taken the headrest, which we're trying to get our brain around why they would take the headrests out of the vehicle. But anyway, that's what's happened.
Peter, you did...
My driving glasses haven't been recovered either.
Peter, we don't want to go too far, but you didn't lose much else out of the car? Like, you didn't have any cameras or anything like that in the car to lose?
No, I had about, like everyone does, I probably had about 50 or 60 or a bit more dollars in loose change sitting in the centre console, so I can kiss that goodbye, and a lovely warm jacket, which was very handy for, wet and cold days, and even had a blanket in there as well on the occasion sitting in the car and it's freezing. Sometimes throw a blanket over myself, so just little bits and pieces that are more annoying than anything else, but no... nothing sort of overly substantive, other than I would reiterate my driving glasses are both a tinted and untinted pair, which I've got one replaced, and that's $300 just to replace a pair of driving glasses. So it adds up. It's going to be an expensive exercise whichever way it goes.
Which I
didn't need, exactly.
Now, what else would you like to talk about, Peter, before we take a quick break?
Yeah, look, I had had this carryover from last month, actually. We didn't get around to it, but it was there's been a little bit of to-ing and fro-ing in respect to employers and employees' rights when it comes to employers spying on staff at work.
Oh, yeah.
And a lot of this is to uh, a sort of, lot of this has emanated, of course, from a lot more people, particularly during the pandemic, working from home.
Yep.
And also reluctantly having to return to the office, of which I don't think many people, most people would choose not to, at least not 5 days a week anymore anyway. So what it is employers are basically having software in potentially installed on either their computers or employees' computers.
Yep.
And the capability of the software, particularly, you know, as technology gets better and better and AI comes into play and all sorts of things, is that the potential exists, Alan, that they can actually basically monitor the activity of the person at the keyboard, or in fact on the desktop itself, whether that be through perhaps a camera or through a keystroke recorder or through audio recording to, you know, to basically record what activity. So remember to sort of sigh every minute or so, Alan, so people know you're actually working, or bang away at a fictitious keyboard or something, so it sounds like you're flying away there, typing away. But yeah, there's now sort of some to-ing and fro-ing going back, and it's going to be an interesting one because I'm sure some test case is going to come up down the track eventually, where an employee is going to claim that. That they have, you know, their privacy in effect has been breached by the employer basically monitoring them in the workplace, whether it's actually the physical workplace as in the office in the old days or whether it's the workplace at home.
Peter, what's the difference, talking about that, what's the difference to what we started talking off about a while ago between stalking? Where does the employee, the employer's right, cross over into stalking?
Well, I think that's speaking as a self-employed person. I'm not right up with sort of the office politics, but I suspect employers would have to be very careful about how they gather and how, probably more importantly, how they use the information. And I think that, you know, again, it comes back to things like the Surveillance Devices Act, where, you know, the restrictions on audio recording are far more onerous than sort of video or photographic recording. There's quite a clear delineation between the two. And then I guess it's also just about general fairness and good conduct as well. But I guess they could argue that they need to have the ability to try and monitor input.
Peter, I've got to take a quick break and we'll be back with more.
Close our eyes and get lost in each other and spend this night just Like I'm the only girl in town. Yeah, I want you to kiss me, baby. Like I'm the only girl in town.
Over the last couple of weeks, we've had a couple of questions from different people, and I think probably the best way to do it, I'm not sure, we don't expect to spend a lot of time on this because we know you give us our time and we don't speak too much, but with the different court cases that you read about and also that when you have to go along and listen to what's going on in court, do you finding more and more of whatever cases they are being done by less and less people? I mean, maybe there's some statistics around. Or does it seem to be that more people are in fact, committing crimes? So if you could have a look at that for us for next time.
Okay, yeah.
Now, sure. Toolkits. You want to talk about cool toolkits, Peter?
Some of your listeners have probably picked up on this article today in the rag, talking about Victorian tradies are struggling to make ends meet amid a significant spike in brazen thieves targeting expensive power tools, leaving thousands of workers without vital equipment. So basically what they're saying, Crime Statistics Agency data revealed tools were stolen every 90 minutes across the state.
Blimey.
With Victoria experiencing a 17% increase in both the number of incidents of tool thefts and the value of the items stolen. So Caulfield South was tradies were an example given, had more than 356,000 worth of tools and power tools stolen from residential properties in the year to March 2025.
So that's where... when they're at home, like not necessarily working on the jobs. Is that what they're saying?
Yeah, I'm guessing that. Yeah, really? And I don't know what the thing about Caulfield South is, that the people, there's a hotbed for stealing tools. But anyway, and a massive 1,800% increase compared to a decade ago for the Glen Eira locality. So not the beautiful Yarra Valley, of course, Alan.
Yeah.
And... 44 incidents of tool theft valued at almost $312,000 in the southeast suburb, with a further 16 incidents of power tool theft. So South Melbourne is about the second most, apparently. And basically, and again, as you say, you mentioned too, whether it's after hours or indeed, as we often see, the tradies sort of parked at the side of the road there, sometimes with their doors and... the trays,
yep.
Tray doors open and things like that where people can basically walk past and walk off. I didn't see any particular references to what type of tools, but they're saying they're targeting expensive power tools. So I'm sure all your tradie nuts out there will know that there's a big difference between something like perhaps a DeWalt or a Milwaukee as opposed to, dare I say, an Azito, which they'll probably choke and laugh at when I say that particular brand.
Peter, I just to back you up, my son-in-law does, he's got a maintenance business and he had the door, the back up, and he grabbed a couple of tools, put the door down and went inside to drop those. By the time it came back, somebody had knocked off stuff out of that. So it must have been someone watching.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's unbelievable, isn't it?
Yeah, they're pretty brazen. So, and of course, then they've got to, try and get some value for it by passing it off to either other tradies or, other venues to try and offload. And, they're not getting a very high percentage in the dollar. I think it runs about 50% in the dollar for new tools. So I can imagine used tools must be about 20% to 30% in the dollar.
Years ago, they used to have to take them down the local pub or somewhere, didn't they? But now you've got all these different trading places on the internet. You could just put them up there and flog them off real quick, couldn't you?
Yep, absolutely. Yes, that's definitely the case. So now we've got time for one more quick
question. We've got about 4.5 minutes, Peter.
Oh, excellent. Okay, because possibly like a lot of your listeners, I have just received my email from Qantas talking about their data breach, which is just hitting the news now, whereby they're saying that there's potentially up to 6 million customers' information has been leaked.
Sure.
They're absolutely assuring everybody that no credit card details, personal financial information or passwords or PIN numbers have been leaked. However, they're sort of semi-conceding that names, email addresses, dates of birth and frequent flyer numbers, which is what I actually have, like many people, Qantas frequent flyer. And the question that immediately comes to mind, and I know we've touched on this before, Alan, is why would a third party be holding that information?
Yeah.
So what they're saying is it's not a leak out of Qantas directly, as I understand it. It is a third-party provider to Qantas that has had the data breach, of which 6 million people's details, to some extent, have been potentially compromised.
So I agree. Why would they have it?
I don't know. And where does it say? I'm sure there's somewhere in the fine print somewhere when you tick a box that says that Qantas reserve the right to provide your information to third-party providers. But a little bit, it reminds me a little bit of one of the other recent ones is, again, why does not that actual entity, another party, a third-party provider, actually have that information?
It shouldn't it?
And that's probably the I'm thinking back to the Optus one was the one that strikes me as being a similar sort of scenario.
You'd wonder, like, you'd think that maybe they're flogging off your details to somebody else to use in marketing or something, wouldn't you?
Well, that would be the suspicion, wouldn't it, that they're basically selling the list, in inverted commas, for marketing and other nefarious purposes, perhaps all these dreaded phone calls that we get from, numbers that... that are made up or provided by these ridiculous providers that seem to get off scot-free when they're providing bulk numbers to, telemarketing-type setups.
Yeah.
Again, you'd have to wonder whether that's why the third party was holding such information.
But
Anyway, just warn all your listeners to keep a watch out for any Qantas. And, of course, the other thing is, of course, the scammers will try and take advantage of this and ring and pretend to be Qantas.
You can see that sticking out a mile, can't you?
Yeah, and you change your credit card details and your PIN number because you're being compromised. And, of course, unfortunately, a certain percentage of people will fall for it and get scammed again.
Peter, look, it's terrific to have you yet again. I always look forward to talking to you. It's Peter from... Absolute Facts. We appreciate all the work that you do for us, and I hope your car comes back in a because the other problem is that you don't want them playing around with the having sort of thrashed the insides out of it either, do you?
No, that's right. Well, as I said, I haven't seen it yet, so I don't know what to expect, but I'll wait to hear from the assessor, and we're going to have an interesting conversation, I'm sure.
I'll bet you. Pink Floyd, Burning Bridges. Tell us in about 20 seconds why it's a good song.
Off the Obscured by Clouds album. So I like the way you're using some of the more obscure albums and songs. And the feature of that is that it's one of the really good songs where it's a duet between Gilmore and Wright, Richard Wright and David Gilmore, as opposed to perhaps Roger Waters that sings on many of the songs.
You're our resident expert on Pink Floyd, so we'll listen to Pink Floyd and Burning Bridges. I'll be back on Sunday between 12 and 3 and 6 and 8, and also next Wednesday between 12 and 3.